29, and we're starting the Sedra MO. This is a Sedra which has many subjects in it. The beginning of the Sedra deals with some of the many laws that apply to the priestly caste, the priestly family, the Kohanim, as they're called, who have more restrictive laws applying to them than do the rest of the Jewish people. So, for example, one of the key laws that applies to them is that they are not allowed to become ritually impure by contact with the dead. We've mentioned this law many times, that the Torah is full of references to Tumah and Tahara, impurity and purity. There are many ways of becoming impure and a couple of ways of becoming pure again. The key way of becoming impure is through contact with the dead. This contact with the dead means touching, carrying, or even being in the same building as a dead body. That is to say, a Jewish dead body.
The Kohanim or all of us?
It applies to all of us. But the Kohanim have an extra law that applies to them, which says that they mustn't willingly do this. They mustn't allow themselves to become ritually impure.
Many years ago, when I was a child, my uncle died, and they lived in North Pedestrian Road, but they had my uncle laid out in the parlour.
Right, but are your family priests?
No.
Are they Kohanim?
No.
So that solves that problem immediately, because if the family are not Kohanim, are not priests, then all members of the family or anyone else is allowed to come into the house and become ritually impure.
God forbid, the person can be laid out in the parlour? I mean, they don't have it much these days, do
they? Well, if a person dies in the house and there's no reason to take them out, very often the tahara, which is the purification and preparation of the body for burial, is done in the house. This is the way it's done. Or the body, if the body was in hospital, then they have a special tahara house, special building, which is designed to be able to carry out the purification ceremony in a professional professional environment. But anyway, just to answer your point, not only, and this is in fact what the Sedra begins with, it tells us that even a family of Kohanim, who normally are not allowed to make themselves impure in the normal way, but when a member of their own family dies, then they are allowed to make themselves impure, and not only are allowed to, but they must do. And that's at the beginning of the Sedra's all about. So we see, just by reading, how this pans out. By Yom HaShem El Moshe, Emor El HaKohanim Bnei Aaron, God said to Moses to say to the Kohanim, the priests, the children of Aaron, they are Marut Aleim, and say to them, Lenefesh Lo Yitamo Bahamov, that no individual should become impure, ritually impure, amongst his people. What that means is a normal Kohen must not make contact with the dead in the ways that I just mentioned, touching, carrying, and so on. That will make him impure. However, it immediately goes on to say, Ki im l'sheiro hakarov a love, but for the near relation, right, the one who is a near relation to him, and le'imo u'le'aviv, his mother and his father, ve'livno u'levito, and his son and his daughter, u'le'achiv, and his brother, then one can become impure. And the rabbis explain that it's not just they can become impure, but they must become impure. So there are seven relations. That is mother, father, brother, sister, son, daughter, and wife. And to these, they must become impure. Except the exception is that v'la'choser habesula hakrova elav asher lo'hoysal ish lo'yitamo. which sister is he allowed and therefore enjoined to make himself impure for? That's only a sister who's not married. Once a woman gets married, she's deemed to belong to her husband's family. And therefore, her brother, who is a Kohen, is no longer allowed to make himself impure for her. And the reason for all of this is because when a person passes away, there is a mitzvah which is incumbent upon every member of the family, but especially the children, which is to bury them. Burial of the dead is one of the most important mitzvahs in the Torah. And we see this proven by the classic situation where we're told that although a Kohen cannot make himself impure for the sake of any other member of the Jewish people that's not a member of his family. So if a Kohen, somebody rings up this Kohen and says, I need help burying my brother. Can you help? Can you come along to the house? And the Kohen can say, I'm sorry, I can't do this. Because you're a relation, you've got other relations. There are other people being involved in the arrangements for the burial. I'm not allowed to help you with that. Of course, he can help with administration, like running to the registrar, but he can't help physically by coming in contact with the dead body. However, there is a concept of what's called a meis mitzvah. A meis mitzvah means a dead body that has no one to look after it. And this, unfortunately, in Jewish history, happened many times. If we think back to the time of the war, or the times of communist Russia, when Jews were in remote places, they were in exile, they were in Siberia, they were sent to the far north of Russia, they met a fellow Jew who died in a camp, in a prison camp, a labor camp, or whatever, and they don't have any relations there because they're separated from their family, and somehow or other, they might treat the body in an offhand way, so that the Jew who is there, who is able to do something about it, now has upon him the mitzvah of burying this Jewish dead body in a reverent manner, in a respectful manner.
Say they can't find a minion.
A minion is not the key thing. A minion, it's very nice if you have a minion, but the key thing is to get the body buried, even if it's only one person. I mean, I read a story experiences of Hasidim in Russia, especially Lubavitch Hasidim, who were in the war situation and under communist Russia, and of how they, I think this particular story was about when the Nazis had herded all the townsfolk into, all the Jews even, into a building and set fire to the building, and many perished, and there were Jewish people and non-Jewish people, and they took them and threw them in a mass grave and covered them over. And these few Hasidim decided that they've got to go in there into this mass grave and pull out all the bodies that they knew to be Jewish and give them a decent proper Jewish burial. And that's an example of the kind of self-sacrifice for this mitzvah of what's called meis mitzvah, which means a dead body that has no kovrim, has nobody to bury it. And the classic situation that is talked about is to show how important this mitzvah is, that even though a Kohen, and especially a Kohen Gadol, a high priest, who is not even allowed to make himself impure for his relations, he has a special role. Whereas a normal Kohen can make himself impure for his seven relations, and must therefore, the Kohen Gadol is not even allowed to do it, even if his father dies. He's not allowed to make himself impure for the sake of burying his own father. He's allowed to attend the funeral, but in such a way that he doesn't come near the body. So even he, who is the most stringent laws apply to him, if he is walking along the road, and it's Yom Kippur, and he's on the way to the temple in order to do the service for the whole Jewish people on Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the year, and he comes across a dead body that has no one to bury it, he is obliged to wait and make sure that this body is buried, and even if it means that he's the only one to do it, and it means that he has to make himself impure for this meis mitzvah, he has to do it. And that shows you how important it is to do this final kindness to a dead body to make sure that it gets a decent Jewish burial. And so the rabbis describe this kindness that we do for the dead in burying them. He calls it chesed shel emes. It's the kindness of truth. What's the explanation, the terminology, the kindness of truth? The rabbis explain that the reason why it's called the kindness of truth is true kindness means when somebody does something without ulterior motives. They just do it because it's a mitzvah to do it. They don't think of what benefits and gain they can get from their good deed.
Like so, your look last week. Like coming out and... That's an example, isn't it?
Well, we hope that's an example. We certainly didn't do it for financial reward, as we didn't get commission on that locksmith's outlay, or his the money he got. So, that would be an example. But the prime example which the rabbis give is of a kindness that's done to a dead person. Because if you do a kind act or a kind deed to a living person, at the back of your mind, you can say to yourself, like the, you even hear people saying this,
you owe me.
You owe me one. I owe you one. You know, yeah. I'll buy you a beer after work, is what the goyim say. Oh, I owe you one. I'll buy you a beer. You know, it means that I'm going to remember this kindness and favor you did for me, and on a subsequent occasion, I'll find a way of paying you back. So that is what's at the back of people's minds. That when they do a favor for someone else, they think, the other guy, you know, I've got somebody owes me something. One day he'll give me a favor back. So therefore, their kind deed, which they did on this particular occasion, can no longer be described as an altruistic, pure motive for doing it. However, when a person does a favor for a dead person that's got no relations, then who's going to pay you back? You've got no thought in your mind that someone is going to buy me a beer, right? So no one's going to do that because this dead body's got no relations anyway.
So is it a mitzvah? For instance, I never knew my husband's grandparents. Are they buried in Edmonton? Nobody ever goes to see their grave, but when I go to visit my brother's grave, I always go to visit their grave. I never knew them. But I say a prayer, something. Is that a mitzvah?
Definitely a mitzvah. The rabbis explain like this.
I don't count it as anything. I just think to myself, well, I can't leave this cemetery without doing no one else is going.
Right, so that's an example, because the rabbis explain that we as living beings in this physical world, down here in this, what's called the world of Asiya, the world, you know, the physical world, remembering that there are spiritual worlds above and beyond this one, where the souls of the departed ones reside. Now we know that we can only do mitzvahs in this world. This world is the place where you can do a mitzvah and earn all the rewards and all the benefits that accrue from doing a mitzvah.
You don't get rewards for that.
Right, so what I'm explaining is that once a person has passed away from this world and they're living as a soul in the Garden of Eden or whatever, wherever, whatever level they're at, they can no longer earn any benefits or any rewards for anything they do, because this is the only world in which you can do a mitzvah. So can we, who are living in this world, benefit the soul who has departed? And the answer is yes. We can give them something by us doing a mitzvah on their behalf, and they get the credit for it. So for example, when people pass away, it's traditional amongst Jewish people that during the year that we're mourning for them, because Kaddish is said for 11 months, and there's a first year of mourning till the first Yahrzeit. So for example, the fifth Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab as he was called, he left a tzavor, which means a living will, before he passed away, which he actually wrote many decades before he passed away. It's called Chanoich Lenar, and it was instructions to his wife as to how to bring up their only son, who subsequently became the sixth Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak. So in this book, Chanoich Lenar, he gives instructions as to what to do when he passes away. And he says to his wife that you should make sure that a candle is lit during the first year. And this actually is a custom amongst many people, that a candle is left burning the whole